Chapter 9. Prophecies Concerning the Philistines. The Philistines were another branch of the family of Ham, and descended from his son Mizraim. They occupied a strip of land along the southern part of the west coast of Canaan, about 40 miles long by 15 miles wide. They had 5 principal cities, over which there were placed lords, called the 5 lords of the Philistines. These 5 cities were Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Ekron, and Gath. Like some other of the early inhabitants of Canaan, there were giants among them, one of the latest of whom was Goliath of Gath, who challenged the armies of Israel, but was slain by young David, trusting in the Lord God of Israel. It is evident that the Philistines occupied this land in the time of the patriarchs, and that they possessed it as far south as Gerar. For we are told of Abraham's encounter with Abimelech, the king of Gerar, when he sojourned in the Philistines' land many days. Isaac also, in the time of the famine, went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar, and contended with them for the possession of a well. It would seem that in those days Gerar was the chief city of the Philistines, since their king dwelt there. And it may be that at a later period they extended their dominion northwards to the 5 cities mentioned above, and set lords over them. They came originally from the island of Kaphtor, which some considered to be Crete, and probably dwelt at first there with the descendants of Kaphtorim, another son of Mizraim. In any case, by the time the children of Israel came out of Egypt, the Philistines occupied the coastal strip of land referred to above, and proved to be a constant source of strife to the Israelites when they eventually occupied the land of promise. The Philistines were amongst the nations which were left in the land to prove Israel, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord, and to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. The issue quickly showed that these nations were a means of turning the Israelites aside, for which they were given up to the power of their enemies, until the Lord raised up judges to deliver them. They were thus given up to the power of the Philistines for 40 years, until the Lord raised up Samson. Shamgar also in his day had slain of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel. In the time of Samuel, Israel was smitten before the Philistines and lost about 4,000 men, and when the ark of God was brought into the camp, this also was taken, and the priests of the Lord, Eli and his 2 sons, fell in one day. What a grievous stroke this was for the Israelites, and how they were indeed made to feel the presence of these enemies in their borders. The Philistines brought the ark of the Lord to Ashdod, and set it up before their fish god, Dagon. But as you will remember, Dagon fell before it, to their great alarm. So the ark was sent on to Gath, which also was visited with the manifest judgments of the Lord. And when they sent it on to Ekron, the people cried out against it, and the 5 lords were gathered together to devise a method of returning the ark to Israel. Samuel then gathered the people to Mizpeh, where they fasted and confessed their sins, and the Philistines were subdued and came no more into the coast of Israel, and the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel, and the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel from Ekron even unto Gath, and the coast thereof did Israel deliver out of the hands of the Philistines. When Israel would have a king like the nations around them, and Saul was chosen, he and his son Jonathan attacked the Philistines, which stirred up these enemies again, so that they came with 30,000 chariots and 600 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. However, at that time, the Lord gave a miraculous success to Jonathan, which led to the deliverance of Israel. But it was not many years before the Philistines gathered themselves again to battle and set forward their giant champion Goliath to defy the armies of Israel. And you know the great deliverance that was given by means of David. Later on in the reign of Saul, the Israelites were still further troubled by the Philistines until they eventually slew both Saul and Jonathan in battle. But the time came when the Lord, by his prophets, began to pronounce the judgments that were to come upon the Philistines for their troubling of his chosen people, as well as for their idolatries and soothsaying. The prophet Amos, even in the days of Uzziah, foretells the desolation that was to come on the cities of the Philistines. I will send a fire on the wall of Gaza, which shall devour the palaces thereof. And I will cut off the inhabitant from Ashdod, and him that holdeth the scepter from Ashkelon. And I will turn mine hand against Ekron, and the remnant of the Philistines shall perish, saith the Lord God. Zephaniah also corroborates these threatenings in the days of Josiah. For Gaza shall be forsaken, and Ashkelon a desolation. They shall drive out of Ashdod at the noonday, and Ekron shall be rooted up. Woe unto the inhabitants of the seacoast, the nation of the Cherethites! The word of the Lord is against you, O Canaan, the land of the Philistines. I will even destroy thee, that there shall be no inhabitant. And the sea coast shall be dwellings and cottages for shepherds and folds for their flocks. And the coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah. They shall feed thereupon. In the houses of Ashkelon shall they lie down in the evening. Then follows Jeremiah after the death of Josiah. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet against the Philistines, before that Pharaoh smote Gaza. Thus saith the Lord, Behold, waters rise up out of the north, and shall be an overflowing flood, and shall overflow the land and all that is therein, the city and them that dwell therein. Then the men shall cry, and all the inhabitants of the land shall howl. For the Lord will spoil the Philistines, the remnant of the country of Kaphtor. Baldness is come upon Gaza. Ashkelon is cut off with the remnant of their valley. O thou sword of the Lord, how long will it be ere thou be quiet? How can it be quiet, seeing the Lord hath given it a charge against Ashkelon and against the seashore? Ezekiel, too, adds many like words against the Philistines. Thus saith the Lord God, because the Philistines have dealt by revenge, and have taken vengeance with a despiteful heart. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I will stretch out mine hand upon the Philistines, and I will cut off the Cherethims, and destroy the remnant of the sea coast. And I will execute great vengeance upon them with furious rebukes, and they shall know that I am the Lord, when I shall lay my vengeance upon them. Then Zechariah, speaking of the doom of Tyre, says, Ashkelon shall see it and fear. Gaza also shall see it and be very sorrowful. And Ekron, for her expectation, shall be ashamed. And the king shall perish from Gaza, and Ashkelon shall not be inhabited. And a bastard shall dwell in Ashdod, and I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. If we look at the subsequent history of Philistia and its condition at the present day, we shall again prove that the word of the Lord is true and must inevitably be fulfilled. Gaza was taken by Alexander the Great, who slew its defenders and sold their wives and children as slaves. Later on, the Maccabees besieged the city and conquered it, until eventually it came under the dominion of Herod, and later still of the Mohammedans and Crusaders. Today, the site of ancient Gaza consists of sand hills, which cover the ruins, so that where Gaza once stood, not a fragment of ruin, 1 cubic foot in size, not a shrub, not a blade of grass was seen to interrupt the desolation. Baldness is come upon Gaza, as Jeremiah had foretold. Then take Ashkelon. Although Herod the Great bestowed much labor and expense upon it, as being his birthplace, it became the scene of much conflict during the time of the Crusades, and was repeatedly dismantled and rebuilt until about AD 1270 its fortifications were destroyed and the port became filled up with stones. For centuries, its desolation has been complete. Though to some extent inhabited, it is another melancholy instance of prostrate magnificence. A blight has descended upon Ashkelon, and all is dreary desolation. Traveler after traveler describes it as one of the most mournful scenes of utter desolation on which the eye can rest. Had not Zephaniah said, "Gaza shall be forsaken, and Ashkelon a desolation"? Dr. Porter also describes his visit to the site of Ashkelon. What a scene of desolation there burst at once upon our view. With all my experience of Syrian ruins, and I have seen Bozra and Kinath, Kardara and Samaria, Baalbek and Palmyra, I was not prepared for this. Such utter, terrible desolation I had never met before. The site of Ashkelon is in form like an old Roman theater, the sea in the front, and the ground once occupied by the city rising gradually and uniformly to a wall, which runs in a semicircle from shore to shore. The whole site was before us. Not a house, nor a fragment of a house, remains standing. Not a foundation of temple or palace can be traced entire. One half of it is occupied with miniature fields and vineyards and fig orchards, rubbish mounds here and there among them, great heaps of hewn stones and broken shafts, and sculptured slabs of granite and marble. The rude fences exhibit similar painful evidences of ancient wealth and magnificence. The other half of the site was still more fearfully desolate. It is so thickly covered with drift sand that not a heap of rubbish, not a vestige of a ruin remains visible, save here and there where the top of a column rises like a tombstone above the smooth surface. The sand is fast advancing. It has already covered some of the highest fragments of the southern and western wall, which was in 1866. And ere a quarter of a century has passed, the site of Ashkelon will have been blotted out forever. Now we come to Ashdod. Perhaps this home of Dagon had escaped, owing to its great strength. Rather, this seems to have made it a covetous prize to its enemies. Assyria held it for a time, as Isaiah tells us. The Egyptian pharaoh Psammetichus besieged it for 29 years, the longest siege on record, so strong were its defenses. But its fall had been prophesied, and the word of the Lord must be fulfilled. So the Maccabees were successful in conquering it, and although it revived somewhat in the days of Herod and was later made into a bishopric, it is now little more than an Arab village, though the site is marked by ruins, by broken arches, by fragments of marble pillars partly buried, by dilapidated capitals, cornices, and other mementos of a magnificence that has all passed away. The plain sweeps the northern base of the low rounded hill on which once stood the royal city of Ashdod. The temples, palaces, and houses have all gone. The dust of centuries has covered them. Terraced orchards of figs and olives, apricots and pomegranates, now occupy their places, clothing the hillside from base to summit. The modern village of Esdod, a confused group of mud hovels, lies embowered in the eastern slope. Nor is Ekron any better. Acre soon came in sight, and a quarter of an hour's gallop along a beaten path and through fields of corn brought us to the village. We dismounted and sat down beside the only antiquity of the place, a large deep well, such a well probably as the servants of Abraham dug at Gerar and Beersheba in olden times. A crowd of villagers collected to gaze at the strangers. The men were chiefly conspicuous for the huge daggers in their girdles and their enormous turbans, which seemed out of all proportion with the rest of their scanty wardrobe. The women were in rags, and most of the children stark naked. Acre is a wretched village, containing some 40 or 50 mud hovels, its narrow lanes encumbered with heaps of rubbish and filth. It stands on a bare slope, and the ground immediately around it has a dreary, desolate look, heightened by a few stunted trees scattered here and there round the houses. Yet this is all that marks the site and bears the name of the royal city of Ekron. There is not a solitary vestige of royalty there now. With feelings which it would be difficult to describe, we took out our Bibles and read the doom pronounced upon it by the Hebrew prophet while it yet stood in all the pride of its strength and beauty. Ekron shall be rooted up. As for Gath, the home of the mighty giant Goliath, it also lies in ruins. One object of my tour of Philistia was to discover, if possible, the long-lost site of Gath. It was, therefore, with an interest approaching to excitement that we surveyed the position and examined the remains of every village and the ruin we passed. But from the moment we gained the crest of the first ridge north of Beit Jibrin, there was one prominent object away before us which attracted our chief attention, a bare white conical hill standing on the very edge of the great plain. At length we reached it and rode over rubbish heaps and terraced vineyards to its summit. It is crowned with the foundations of an old castle, and round its sides are numerous remains of ancient buildings. This hill, if fortified, as it evidently was from the earliest ages, would be the key of the Philistine plain on the east. Watchmen from its summit could see every hostile band that would attempt to break forth from the mountain defiles. The warlike Philistines would never have overlooked a position so commanding and naturally so strong, one so well fitted also for defending those vast cornfields in which lay their wealth and their power. From the moment I set foot upon Teles Shephi, I felt convinced that it is the site of the royal city of Gath.